often to take on air and get food for the workforce. They can see it, but nobody will talk, because it's the nightmare Alpha Island and everyone's terrified, Rodario added. Ingenious, these Thirdlings. The front story of Alpha was a neat idea to keep people quiet. We can only hope the Queen's ships come across the island by chance, and word gets round they're not really Alpha, and that there's a considerable reward for information about the island's whereabouts. Tungdil helped himself to tea and let his thoughts wander a little. In his mind's eye, he saw Belindis and Circa, dwarves as different as it was possible to be. He had been hoping his fascination with Circa would be a passing infatuation, intrigued though he was by her appearance and behaviour. She was the opposite of Gerdlegard dwarves, but he still couldn't keep his eyes off her, or his thoughts away. He recalled another time his loyalty to Belindis had been tested. Mir. She had been a Thirdling spy, a scholar like him, and Belindis, under pressure from the elders of her clan, had been advised to leave him. It was no wonder that Mir and he had got together, until her treachery was revealed. Then it had been easier not to be troubled by conscience. For a magus in training, Durgard's a bit on the vulnerable side, don't you think? Rodario had discovered the cake the farmer's wife had left on the side. And then he spotted the daughter of the house, running past the window in the rain to the barn to milk the cows. What a delight, he murmured dreamily, cutting himself a slice. What would Tassia say? Fergus said crossly. You're the same as 5 cycles ago. It's not clever, just selfish. I've no idea what she'd say. She didn't ask me my opinion when she slept with other men, he retorted, taking a bite. We're both grown up, and have a taste for life. So, what's the problem? He would never admit to the jealousy he felt. Don't you have eyes for women folk any more? There aren't any women in my life now. I swore to be faithful to Nomura. Just because her body no longer exists doesn't mean I don't stay true, he said, his voice unsteady. I dream of her each night, and she gave me the strength to survive the time on the island. I would never betray her by desiring another. An admirable attitude, Fergus. Keep away from women and you won't get hurt. He chewed the mouthful of cake, his eyes still on the farmer's daughter. Imagine if you had fallen for Tassia. Oh, Palandiel, what a disaster! She's my female equivalent. Tungdil noticed Fergus was getting jumpy. The girl certainly understands the art of seduction, I can tell you. She's as faithful as a leaf in the breeze, blowing this way and that. Rodario rattled on, stuffing his face with cake. It has cost me dear finding that out. I can only warn everyone about her. He laughed quietly. Little slut. But I can't stay away. Then he turned to face the dwarves. Do you still need me? I'd like to help the farmer's girl with her churns. Leave her be, said Tungdil. I don't want a row with her father. They've been so good to us. Don't you worry your head, hero. I'll be as discreet as anything. He winked at them and left the room. The barn where Goda and Voindil were working out was huge. The farmer had put fleeces down in the old hayloft and new washed wool waiting to be spun. 2 weaving looms behind had been clattering away the last couple of orbits. Boindil took a couple of ropes from the wall and was snaking them in turn toward Goda.
Imagine these are lots of opponents attacking you.
The first one, with an iron ring at the end, was coming at her fast. She turned and avoided it.
Excellent, he said, aiming the second at her left thigh.
Goda managed to swerve out of the way several times, but the 5th rope hit home. The iron ring hit her on the breast.
Ironheart tutted impatiently.
That's you dead, Goda. That was a sword thrust in the chest.
He pointed to the floor.
Forty, I'm not doing press-ups, she protested. I would have warded off the blow.
You wouldn't.
He looked her full in the eyes and regretted it at once. His warrior heart was working overtime.
50!
Goda picked up her flail.
Try it again, master. I'll show you what the Night Star can do.
No, you won't. You're supposed to be taking avoiding action.
He was angry that she was questioning his authority.
60!
Now he made a threatening move toward her. She raised her weapon.
First, you'll have to get me on the floor.
She pulled in her head, and her eyes blazed.
I have had enough of being ordered about, master.
Previously, Boindil would have rejoiced at the prospect of being free of his young pupil. But now it was his worst nightmare.
You're confusing persistence with bullying. It's for your own good,
he said to cover his embarrassment.
You asked me to teach you how to fight.
Or else 70?
She laughed with malice. Ironheart grabbed the handle of the Night Star and rammed the top of it against her head. Goda started to topple, and he placed his foot behind hers, pulling it from under her so that she fell.
100,
he said, twirling her weapon in his hands.
You let go of the Night Star. You know only to do that if you have a second weapon on you.
She propped herself up on her elbows, ignoring a trickle of blood from her forehead. Boindil sighed and went over to crouch down beside her.
Goda, I'm trying to keep you safe and alive.
With push-ups? Is it to impress the orcs? Perhaps I can challenge an opponent to a contest,
she hissed, sitting up. Again, their faces were very close. Ironheart swallowed hard and swung back as if a vanger had bitten him.
No. It's to motivate you to make more effort, he muttered. If you don't make the mistakes, you don't have to do the press-ups.
He took a handful of the wool and tried to wipe the blood from her face.
What do you think you're doing?
Goda thrust his hand away roughly.
I know what you wanted, master.
She flashed at him.
And I know what you want. Don't forget you killed Sander. I feel nothing for you. I'd rather have Bramdel than you. Make me a warrior, and then let's see how good your teaching was. You can keep everything else, I don't care.
Boindil was thunderstruck. Her harsh tone had hit him to the quick. She had known exactly what he was thinking. He swallowed, searching for words. His spark of hope was dying. Then he pulled himself together.
It's not what you think. I am your instructor, and I am concerned for you, that is all.
So I should hope.
Goda turned and pushed herself up from the floor. She began her press-ups, 100 of them. Blood dripped from her forehead, but that did not bother her. Ironheart watched, vowing to himself that he would not give up. When Rodario opened the door, he found a soldier whose armor bore the insignia of King Bruron.
A message for Tungdil Goldhand,
he announced, looking past Rodario.
That'll be you?
Eyes as keen as an eagle's, joked the showman. How many dwarfs do you see sitting here?
The soldier went over to Tungdil, handing him several rolls and folded papers.
I am to bring your answer straight back to His Majesty, he said, retreating. I'll wait outside. Get yourself something to eat and have a rest, invited Tungdil. It will take some time. Send Boindil and Sirka in.
He waited silently until the messenger had left the room and the others had joined him. Then he unrolled the parchment. Goda came in as well. She seemed to have her mentor's complete confidence. Tungdil noticed she had dried blood on her face. Weapons practice must have been rougher than usual today.
It's from Prince Malin, Tungdil read out. The initial attacks on the caves to Boribor have been successful. The monster whose arm I severed has been killed. His face showed regret. So far, Malan reports he has lost 711 men in the caves. Most of them died through sorcery. There is no indication that the Unslayables are using the diamond's power. Furthermore, the first contingents of Thirdlings and Firstlings have arrived. They will be taking over from his soldiers.
May Vrakas keep him safe, murmured Ironheart.
Tungdil started to read Gandagar's missive. In exchange, the elves have sent warriors to the realms of the Secondlings and Thirdlings to undertake guard duties on the walls and gates.
Everything is running smoothly, he writes. The broker will kick up soon.
This was Circa's dark interpretation of events.
They're just taking up their positions. They have all the monarchs in Parista at their mercy, and they're creeping into the mountains to get close to the dwarf rulers. It's like what they did to us.
She clenched her fists.
The difference is that no one in Girdlygard is prepared to stop them.
Not without proof. Tungdil repeated the words of the High King.
I tried my best in the assembly, but Gandagar would not let me speak.
Ironheart looked at the undergroundling.
That is the way of it. No one would have believed you or Sundalan. Not after he'd said that about exterminating elves.
There's no reason to lie. They were the danger, not us, objected Circa.
You carry orc blood. I bet most of them see you and your kind as a threat, he grumbled, resting his hands on the head of his crow's beak.
Since learning of their origins, his attitude to the strangers had changed. He rejected them out of hand. He despised them.
Ubar formed us out of mountain blood. We have the strength of the mountains within us.
Circa had had enough of being insulted in this way. She stood up and approached Ironheart, her eyes blazing with anger.
Ubar created the Ubariu from that same blood, made them taller and stronger still, and instilled in them a hatred of evil. That is what binds us and the Ubariu, dwarf. They have never betrayed their land or the people who live there.
She pointed to Godo with her weapon.
Look, she's a Thirdling. Can she make that same claim? Which of us two is more trustworthy?
Your status is far below that of my pupil, undergroundling.
The warrior twin was not impressed by her anger and was not going to tolerate her attack on Goda.
Hold your tongue!
Now it was Tungdil's task to settle this. Circa was being attacked.
She is right, Ironheart. Goda could easily be a traitor. You know nothing about her, except what she tells you. Has she given you any proof of where she's from, or of the story she tells? Is there a Thirdling who can back up her story? You know just how clever Mir was. I don't like you bringing her to a meeting where secrets are being discussed.
Ironheart looked up in amazement. He would never have expected his friend to criticize him in this way. Goda stepped forward.
I will not take your insults, undergroundling.
Circa smiled at her.
I have told no lies about your people. Not all of you enjoy the same good reputation as Tungdil Goldhand or Sander Flameheart. We are on our way to seek out and bring two evil Thirdlings to justice. They are Thirdlings, Goda, not undergroundlings. We have no malicious intent on Girdlegard. We wouldn't have spared dwarf lives as we did in our pursuit of the missing diamond.
Rodario insinuated himself between the warring parties and offered round the plate of cake.
Perhaps it's time we all calmed down and remembered who we are really here to fight, before you two scratch each other's eyes out. Have some cake, it's delicious.
Goda sat down and rested her hand on the night star, mirroring Ironheart's gesture with his crow's beak. Circa went round the table to stare at the map. Nobody ate any cake.
Well, it's all for me then, mumbled Rodario between mouthfuls,
and he went back to the window to watch the farm girl again.
Rodario is right. Tungdil looked at Ironheart and his pupil, but there was no apology forthcoming. Instead, he held up the letter. Gandagas says that the Secondlings have halted and destroyed a machine that was killing dwarves with gas. Inside it, they found containers made of stone with substances in glass tubes, which combined to make a poison that did for 13 dwarves before the machine was tipped into a mineshaft and buried under rubble. They assume it was a similar machine that poisoned the firstling wells.
So much for the elves being the guilty parties, Goda said to Circa, who waved her hand dismissively.
Ironheart watched Fergus, who was weeping softly, his hands in front of his face. Once more, it was an invention of his that was causing death and destruction. They sensed it could have been much worse. Poison gas in a densely populated part of the Blue Mountain Range would have meant the number of victims would have been higher still. Hundreds, Fergus thought.
We have to find the island quickly and capture it, he said, his tone subdued.
He took his hands from his face, wiping away his tears and running his fingers through his hair.
The monsters will soon have to visit the source to recharge with magic. They need the island for that. It will be soon.
There must be no more victims. Tungdil agreed.
I'll ask Dergard if he thinks he can travel. Then we'll set off for the shore to embark in search of the island. We'll leave the injured elf on Windsport Island. It'll be the safest place for him.
He tried not to look at Ironheart while he was dispensing further orders.
Prepare to move off. The meeting is over.
Boindil and Goda left the room. Rodario went too, wanting to escape the uncomfortable atmosphere. Fergus finished drinking his tea and left Tungdil alone with Circa.
Your friends will blame me that you spoke up on my behalf, she said, coming over and stroking his beard.
He caught hold of her hand and pushed it gently away.
No, Circa, he smiled. Don't make it harder for me than it already is.
He still had received no answer to his letter to Belindis.
I'm finding it too hard to resist. Then give in, she whispered, raising her arm again to touch him. There's no harm, Tungdil. We like each other, and we will love each other. It is only a question of time. We can postpone it or go ahead and feel much better. Who knows what the morrow may bring?
She moved forward and kissed him. This time, he did not try to stop her. He relished the tenderness. His body was eager for more. He placed his arms round her. She was slim and wiry, and at the same time immensely strong under his hands. And yet he pushed her away.
Wait. I have to ask you something, he said breathlessly,
blood surging through him like a river of fire.
What is Sunderland going to do? You want to know that right now? I couldn't ask you when the others were here, he smiled. I didn't know you wanted to kiss me. I just wanted to talk.
Circa took a deep breath and clasped his hands. He will prepare my homeland to avert the worst, she answered vaguely.
That could mean anything.
She gazed into his eyes.
I will tell you a secret.
Before we left to come to Girdlegard, Sunderland called the Ubar people and the Akrontas together, she said slowly. They will have gathered on the northern border by the gates.
So that was why the orcs were desperately attempting to break through the Forthlings' brown mountains. They had an army of orc haters at their backs, driving them on. An invasion? You want to conquer Girdlegard? No, we want the stone back. We want to crush the seed of danger that threatens our land. Stone and seed, both are here in Girdlegard.
Tungdil swallowed.
Circa, how big is the army? They will be 80,000 Ubariu, 4,000 Akrontas, and 50,000 of my own people.
Oh, Vrakus, he groaned,
seeing Girdlegard submerged in blood. The Fourthlings will fight you because they think you threaten them. They will launch everything they have against you to keep you away from the diamond. And fail. For the Akrontus, it will be easy to blast the gates open. We have reconnoitred and found your weak spots. Circa seemed relieved to be able to tell him everything at last. But they won't have to. Our scouts have found a way through the Brown Mountains.
Never.
Yes. Ubar showed them a broad path that an army can use without being seen. They can go straight past the Fourthling bastions.
It's impossible, Tungdil contradicted her. It can't be done. The peaks can't be climbed. You will soon see it is true. The monsters from the Outer Lands could have found it just as well.
They did find it, Tungdil. Several times. We stopped them ever carrying the discovery back to their own kind. Circa paused for breath. Sunderland did not want us to tell you before we had recovered the diamond, but I think you need to know. She stroked the back of his hand. Take it as proof of my trustworthiness. So, the peace we have had in Girdlegard is due not only to harmony between the dwarf folks, but to you, he mouthed, shocked to the core. He was imagining the extent of the destruction if armies of ogres, trolls, Alfar, Bognilim, and other Teon-bred horrors marched in via Urgon with no warning, streaming out over the rest of Girdlegard. Nothing would remain. So those cycles of deceptive calm, they owed to the protection the undergroundlings had given them. And the undergroundlings were now at risk themselves. Why did you do it? Why did you never show yourselves? What for? None of your kind came over. We assumed you did not like us, and we knew that our brotherhood pact with the Ubario would cause trouble between us. She stood up and went to the door. Now it's clear we were right to stay hidden. I must tell them that we're leaving for Weyen, she said in the doorway. You won't tell anyone what I've said? A thousand questions were burning on Tungdil's tongue, but he controlled himself. No one, he promised, touching his axe to strengthen the vow. By keen fire, I swear it. He smiled at her, and she slipped out. His thoughts raged in tumult. Unslayables, undergroundlings, it all sounded like unmitigated disaster. It lay in his hands to prevent the catastrophe. Again. He did not feel particularly strong and was pleased to know there would soon be support. Soon he would be able to call on the help of his foster father, Lot Ionen, a wise magus, older than any other soul in Girdlegard. He possessed a strong intellect with a wealth of experience. He had always stood Tungdil in good stead with his sound counsel. His assistance would be needed again. Or better still, Lot Ionen should decide what to do. Tungdil did not want to be making decisions. He caught sight of the last of the sealed letters. He had refrained from reading this one out. It was from Glaimbar Sharpaxe. Tungdil was afraid of what it would say. But read it, he must. He stood up, tearing it open. Highly esteemed Tungdil Goldhand, you were correct in thinking that I still am very attached to Belindis. I summoned her to me as soon as I received your letter. To my great joy, she accepted the invitation, and to my even greater delight, she promised to return to my side. As my first wife, she has every right to be there. I am to tell you that she had been aware of your coldness toward her. For this reason, she is prepared to give you up, on the understanding that she will never have to see you again. She says she would not be able to bear it. I am sure that I shall be able to smooth things between Belindis and her clan so that relations are as she deserves. I shall be a good husband to her, and she will be the best royal consort the Fifthling realm has ever seen. I thank you for the openness you have shown. I respond in kind. True feelings do not admit of change. Belindis has learned painfully that there is no stable commitment on your part. But we, children of the Smith...
Tungdil tore the letter through. He did not need to go on reading. The important points had been made, and he had no taste for a lecture on fidelity from Glaimbar Sharpax. He knew full well what it entailed. Belindis had read and understood his letter. He would always be grateful to her, and he was aware how much pain he had caused her. He could not rejoice over the parting. He looked out into the courtyard to watch Circa. He met his own reflection on the window glass.
"You coward," he said.
His reflection seemed to nod in agreement. Chapter 12. Girdlegard, Queendom of Wayern, 12 miles northwest of Mifidania, summer 6241st solar cycle. After the initial interruptions, their journey now went smoothly. They boarded the two royal ships that had been placed at their disposal and headed for Mifidania. On the way, they put in at Windsport Island and left the sick elf in the care of Queen Wei's palace archivist. But then, their luck ran out. The dwarfs and their companions learned that even a lake could produce extremely high waves. That evening, the goddess Elria started to play with their vessels. The waters were set in turbulent motion and hurled against the stern of their ships. Constantly tossed up and down, they scudded over Wayan's lake, with clouds of spray drenching them all. Apart from Tungdil, not a single Girdlegard dwarf wasn't seasick. But the undergroundlings kept a firm footing on the swaying deck planks. Tungdil hurried down to check on the statue in the hold. He would never forgive himself if any harm came to it now in this gale, when they were so close to their destination. His legs set wide. To help keep his balance, he walked round the blanket-clad stone figure of his foster father, testing the support ropes. Then he drew back a corner of the blankets to reveal the face.
"Soon," he promised, taking a deep breath.
First it had been a glimmer of hope, the thought he might one day see the familiar and well-loved Magus come alive. Now it was as good as a certainty.
"What will he say when he hears what has been happening?" he wondered, touching the hem of the petrified robe that peeked out under the padded coverings.
He caught himself thinking that Lot Ionan might reproach him with something he had done during the past cycles. Tungdil grinned.
"No, he has no cause, unless the acts of heroes can be condemned."
He tightened one of the ropes holding the statue in place, and then climbed back up the companionway to the others.
"Elria's come up with a new curse for us," groaned Boindil,
leaning over the railing and belching up air. There was nothing in his stomach anymore. It was the first time he had spoken to Tungdil since the row back at the farm. Since then, he had preferred the company of Goda, the actor, and the other dwarves.
"This is nothing," grinned Circa. "Out on the ocean we've seen bigger storms than this. There's open sea in the outer lands."
Tungdil recalled the sketchy drawings he had seen of the land on the other side of the mountains. He did not remember reading about an ocean.
"Of course, we sail it."
Circa looked at the helmsman. "These ships and crews would be lost on our waters. They wouldn't survive the gales." Fergus stood by, not bothered by the weather.
"It must have been somewhere near here,"
he conjectured, scanning the landscape. He called Rodario over.
"The distance is right, and there's an island over there. Is that the one you sailed round?"
Rodario hung onto the mast, water dripping from his clothes.
"Could be. Let's hope the fisherman was correct when he was telling us about the Alfar Island."
"The storm's on our side," said Circa. "We can get close without the Thirdlings seeing us."
Tungdil surveyed his little group of diehards, remembering the nameless undergroundling who had taken them to Sunderland that time. He asked Sturka about him.
What did those tattoos on his forehead signify?
And the symbols on his clothing?
Why wouldn't he give his name?
I think only 7 people know it. I'm not one of them. He's a confidant of Sunderland's and serves the Akront of Letophora. He was trained by him.
This information brought more questions than clarity.
But what?
Mountain ahead!
The lookout shouted down. Tungdil had to suppress his curiosity. Durgard, standing in the cabin doorway, waved Tungdil and Fergus out.
That's where the source is! He yelled against the wind. I can feel it! No doubt about it!
If the island has surfaced, it means they're either expecting monsters or disembarking them, said Fergus. Tungdil pursed his lips. 4 monsters, possibly with a renewed intake of magic, would be impossible odds if they had not brought Lot Ionan back to life first.
We don't have a choice, he said. We have to storm the island and submerge it. Stand by, Durgard!
He hurried up to the helmsman and captain to give orders.
Find a place we can land. Impossible! See that shoreline? Solid rock! It would slice our hull!
There's no other way. We haven't got enough dinghies, and we wouldn't be able to launch them in this weather anyway, insisted Tungdil.
If need be, run the ships aground and wreck them. You're no sailor, Tungdil Goldhand. Have you any idea what you're asking us to do? You're risking all our lives.
Just do it, Captain. There's more at stake than a couple of ships and a few lives. He came off the bridge, then down below deck to chase the dwarves and Weyand soldiers up top to start the onslaught on the island. Lot Ionan's draped statue was brought up on deck and made ready for hoisting on the crane. Tungdil watched the preparations closely. There must be no mistakes. They gathered in the bows. The nightmare Alfar Island grew in size as they approached. Their ships ran aground on the basalt ledge, the spars of the keels bursting and splintering. None of the dwarves or undergroundlings made a sound. They clutched at ropes or the vessel's superstructure. The wooden planks sliced through as if a giant knife had severed them.
All on shore! Shouted Tungdil, sounding a bugle to alert the dwarfs on the second craft.
He leaped off the deck and landed on the rock. Most of the soldiers and dwarfs did the same, although a dozen or so ended up in the water after the ship was forced away from the shore by the broiling waves. They sank without trace. Tungdil cursed under his breath. Their lives must not be lost in vain.
Let the statue down now, he called.
He could see water flooding into the open forward section of the ship. The crane swung round as the sailors maneuvered the winch, and the stone Magus left the deck. When it was half over the shore, the ship lurched again, splitting open on the rock like a loaf of bread torn apart. The heavy weight danced and jumped around like a murderer in a hangman's noose. Then it proved too great a burden. The rope snapped, and the statue plunged down. Dwarves sprang out of the way to avoid being crushed to death. The figure tumbled to the shoreline shelf and started to roll toward the edge.
Hold it fast!
Bellowed Tungdil, running through water that came up to his middle. He pulled and tugged at the statue, together with 5 companions, but the blankets round it were sodden and it was heavier than ever. A wave threw 3 of the dwarves off balance. The stone figure of Lot Ionan slipped over the edge and sank to the depths.
No!
Roared Tungdil, staring in horror at where the statue had disappeared. He stepped forward as if to dive after it.
Let it be!
Ireheart held him back.
Who knows whether you'd ever have been able to bring him back to life? We still have a Magus scholar. We just have to get him to his magic.
The spell which had turned Lot Ionan to stone was affecting Tungdil too, it seemed. He could not move. He could not speak. The wind howled in his face, and though he heard the cracking ship's timbers breaking up, his mind was at a standstill. His plans all over the place like liberated mercury, rolling and disappearing.
What happens now?
The words went round and round in his head.
I've lost him for all time. It's my fault.
This was no way to defeat the island.
Tongdil! Bawled Ironheart in his ear, shaking him. Come on, man, we need you.
Damnation! Shouted Tongdil into the storm, spray washing away his tears of despair and disappointment. Then his resolute dwarf spirit took over, and he exploded into action.
Let's get this blasted island conquered!
He raised his head.
Fergus!
Fergus appeared, waved, and jumped down off the remains of the ship. He took command and led them through the cave Rodario had encountered before. They were now faced with a massive wall.
There's a hidden entrance here, he explained,
fiddling with a black stone let into the wall of the cliff. Tongdil and the others stood back, checking in all directions. Looking back through the cave entrance, Rodario saw another wave lift the damaged ships and smash them against the rock, breaking them into 1,000 pieces in the foaming water. A few sailors crawled onto land, but most went to the bottom with the wreck. There was nothing left but to conquer and prevail. There was no going back. In front of them, the wall moved.
"This'll take us to the corridor on the middle level of the forge," the actor told them. "Some of you set the captives free," commanded Tongdil. "But the rest go on. Follow Fergus and me straight to the Thirdlings."
He nodded at them.
"May Vrakus be with us, and make us once more the protectors of Girdlegard."
He glanced at Circa, smiled, and then signalled to Fergus to set off. 200 warriors ran through the narrow corridor toward an iron door fastened with metal bolts and bars. Fergus knew his way through these locks and contraptions, and the door opened with ease. Rodario recognized the place at once. They were near where he had fled to hide in the cave behind the furnaces. Soldiers and dwarves spread out.
"Hey!"
shouted one of the prisoners.
"Who are you?"
Those standing near him heard the shout. The Girdlegard advance party had been sighted.
"By all the good gods, the Queen's troops, praise be to Elria! Will you save us?"
the prisoner shouted, rattling his chains at them. Now there were shouts and calls on all sides. The men and women were afraid the soldiers would not free them. Their cries brought the guards running, thinking there was a mutiny. They soon saw their mistake, but didn't bother to offer resistance. There were too few of them. Aware they stood no chance, they threw themselves on the mercy of the invading party. But there were 10 of the enemy placed in the galleries above, shooting arrows and throwing down red-hot coals. There were injuries, there were deaths. Their swift progress was halted. Fergus, Rodario, Tongdil, Circa, Ironheart and Goda, meanwhile, were leading a group of warriors to the furnace to attack the Thirdlings. The sentries here did not run away or surrender. They fought with great spirit and were not to be subdued with a few random axe blows.
"Look out!"
Tongdil noticed the forges on the platform above them were tipping, about to empty their molten contents.
"Take cover! Get under the rock ledge now!"
Liquid iron, glowing red, yellow and gold, poured down on them from above, sending sparks flying. Way below, others were caught by the red-hot splashes and were horribly burned. It was an awesome spectacle, a terrible sight, and a fatal one. Several soldiers and chained workers sank screaming in the flood of red-hot iron. Stinging fumes scorched airways and burned lungs. Hisses and screams filled the air.
"Where's Fergus?"
Rodario saw that his friend was missing.
"Fergus!"
he yelled like a maniac. Tongdil had to stop him treading in a pool of molten metal. He would have lost his leg.
"There!"
Ironheart pointed down to where he could see the Magister's burning mantle smouldering on the liquid fire death. A blackened arm was uplifted.
"Rakkus has punished him for his deeds," he murmured.
"Aim at those archers hiding in the cliffs," commanded Tungdil furiously.
They had lost yet another vital member of their invading force. Their ranks were thinning by the minute.
"Farkas," whispered Rodario, horrified at the loss. "My poor friend. The gods have been so cruel to you since the loss of Namora. I thought they had taken pity on you when they allowed me to find you."
That blackened arm had been a last gesture of farewell from the man with whom he had travelled the highways and byways for so many cycles, helping to make the Curiosum a magnificent success. He owed his friends so much. Gone, dead, incinerated.
"We needed you still, Fergus."
He wiped the tears from his eyes and drew his sword.
"The Thirdlings shall die to avenge your death."
He stormed back along the gangway.
"Follow him,"
Tungdil called to the dwarves. He ordered the last of the captive workers to be freed, telling them to keep the guards occupied. Then the group moved through a gap into a tall, narrow cave. Here was the island's heart. The room was full of valves, tubing, and chains that disappeared up into the roof. There were 5 huge boilers, 50 paces high, taking up most of the floor room. Underneath the cauldrons, enormous furnaces raged, producing the steam that made the island function. Rodario saw the Thirdlings next to the metal casing where narrow glass tubes emerged and led into wider funnels. A clear liquid was bubbling away.
"You there!"
He brandished his sword in their direction.
"You are going to pay for what you have done to my friend and to Girdlegard!"
He flew down the steps to confront Veltaga and Bandilor. Bandilor uttered an oath and moved the lever behind him.
"You'll never get out of here alive."
Veltaga ran to one of the cauldrons, swung the lever, and whirled the valve wheels.
"I hope the incredible showman knows there aren't any stage directions for this bit," said Ironheart, rushing down in his wake, followed by Goda and Tungdil and the rest of the warriors.
Bandilor lifted his axe and struck the lever to disable it. Then calmly he turned to parry Rodario's attack. He rammed his shoulder into Rodario's groin and slammed the handle of his axe into the actor's belly. Rodario kept going.
"Revenge for Fergus!"
He kicked Bandilor in the privates and raised his sword to strike home. "Die!" Distracted by the pain, the Thirdling was unable to fend off the weapon. It entered his throat, leaving a wound no medicus in Girdlegard would be able to treat. Blood spurted out, drenching levers and controls. But it was not over yet. Bandilor hit out at Rodario and struck him on the hip. The axe cut a long red swathe down the pelvis bone. Clothing and flesh gaped open, and the actor fell to the floor. Faster than a hammer hits iron on the forge, the Thirdling stood over him, aiming his dying blows at the injured man.
"No, you dwarf hater!"
Boindil suddenly appeared, smashing his crow's beak against the other's weapon, striking it aside. It sang out like a bell as it hit the ground.
"It's me you have to fight!"
He used the impetus to whirl his weapon above his head before hitting home. The blunt end collided with the side of Bandilor's head. His helmet could not protect him against the blow. Bone cracked, his face distorted, and blood shot out from his nose. He was thrust against the wall and slid down beside Rodario, who was lying there groaning.
"One less of you,"
Ironheart spat on the Thirdling and looked at Goda.
"Nothing against your people, just these blasted dwarf haters."
Meanwhile, Tungdil was trying to stop Veltaga's furious activity. Whatever she was doing at the controls was not good news for them. He felt the pressure in his ears and thought the floor under his feet was moving about less.
"Water!"
yelled Durgard, pointing to the entrance. They've let the water in!
Tungdil guessed what that meant. The two thirdlings, faced with obvious defeat, had opened all the valves and started a dive.
Close up the vents! Close everything!
He called to those behind him. And then he was hard on Veltaga's heels, chasing her up the iron stairway to the second floor. There were more levers up there she could wreak havoc with.
You will die with us!
She screamed, grabbing two handles. He reached her just as she was operating the wheel. She hurled a dagger at him, but he deflected it, using keen fire. Then she pulled out a sharp-edged cudgel for close-range combat. In her left hand, a drawn sword. From where he stood, Tungdil could see a huge wave heading for the forge, and clouds of white steam swirled up, hissing wildly. The hot furnaces exploded in the cold water, and metal fragments shot through the air.
Get those blasted vents shut!
Tungdil commanded, as he swerved to avoid a sweeping blow from her cudgel. It missed him, and struck a valve instead. At last, the dwarves had managed to do what Tungdil had ordered. Some of the injured Weyand soldiers crawled through, and they got the iron doors closed. For the others, there was no hope. Water still shot through tiny gaps in a fine spray.
How did you find us?
Hissed Veltaga, raising her weapon for the next blow.
You dwarf haters can't hide from us,
he answered, blocking the attack aimed at his left shoulder. Then he sprang to the side to avoid her sword.
Fergus escaped. He helped us.
The Magister? He's here!
The dwarf woman laughed.
Oh, he'll have thought up a special trap for you if he's brought you here.
She followed through with the blade of her sword and swiped at his arm, but his chain mail protected him.
You must be Tungdil Goldhand. The Magister always said he wanted to kill you.
Tungdil could not understand what she was talking about.
A trap?
He aimed keen fire at her middle. Just in time she moved her cudgel to take the blow, but it bounced back and she was hurt as she swung it. Gasping, she fell backwards against the wall of valves.
He always said everything that befell him was your fault. That's why the Magister helped us with our plan.
These are the lies of a dwarf hater, Tungdil laughed at her. You won't catch me out like that.
Why should I lie to you?
Veltaga launched herself against him, attacking with both weapons at once.
You are here, and you are going to die. What more proof do you want?
Tungdil took the sword thrust on his chest. It was painful and broke one of his ribs, but it didn't kill him. The blade of keen fire struck the metal head off the cudgel, rendering it useless. As quick as lightning, he hit Veltaga on the head with the haft, forcing her down to the iron floor plate.
A fine plan, to sow discord between Fergus and myself, but it won't work.
He placed his boot on her breast and exerted pressure.
Do you surrender?
The dwarf woman was bleeding from her mouth and nose. The Sigurdacea wood handle on the haft was hard as steel.
I don't have to invent anything, Goldhand. All this is the work of the Magister. He thought it all up and built it. He created the monsters for the Unslayables. They promised to use the power of the diamond against the dwarves.
She jerked her arm up and slashed at him with the sword she still held, but Tungdil swung the broad side of the axe, forcing its barbed hook into her forearm, holding her fast.
Will your lies never cease?
Veltaga screamed with pain.
I'm not lying. The Magister planned everything. He planned for you to be here. He wanted vengeance for his family.
A terrible metallic grinding noise filled the space.
The doors! Yelled Goda. They're giving way!
Iahart stood facing the damaged levers and, with the other dwarf's assistance, tried to operate them. One broke off. Another bent and moved the opposite way. Tungdil turned the axe round and pushed down harder on Veltaga's arm.
How deep are we going?
1,700 paces. That's what the Magister said. It's the deepest part of the lake, she howled. You are going to your deaths. We flooded all the chambers. You will die.
She gave a tortured laugh.
Kurdlakard's greatest hero, and the only weapon that can hold back the unslayables, and they'll both be lying at the bottom of the lake. That is a fine revenge.
She spat bloody saliva at his face.
That's exactly what the Magister wanted. He never needed the tunnel into the Outer Lands at all.
Tungdil gave a jerk on the barbed hook, jolting it free of her arm. Her lifeblood ran out onto the floor plates.
You thirdlings are beneath contempt, he growled. You still don't believe me, do you?
Veltaga looked at her shattered arm.
Ask the actor. The Magister sent Bandalore to pay him a visit in Mephitania and threatened him so he wouldn't pursue him any further. He was too good-hearted. I would have killed the man straight away, but the Magister spared his life.
Her eyelids were fluttering now. She was about to lose consciousness.
Kurdlakard will perish. That's what he wanted. And you won't be able to stop it.
She lowered her head, breathing only faintly. It would not be long before she died.
What tunnel?
He asked, leaning over her, grabbing her by the collar of her leather jerkin and yanking her up. If there was a tunnel, maybe it could be their escape from a watery grave.
Where is it?
The mountain shuddered. They had arrived on the bed of the lake, and the groaning of the iron watertight doors was getting louder.
You can't reach the tunnel, she laughed through bloodied teeth. You will?
Her gaze went straight through him, and her eyes glazed over. She was dead. Tungdil let go, and her body fell back.
Did she tell us anything? Asked Rodario. Is there a way out?
He shook his head.
We'll have to come up with something ourselves.
Over here!
They heard the excitement in Circa's voice.
Take a look at this!
6 pillars 10 paces high soared up from the floor, leading to a hexagonal platform with chains and belts hanging from it. Next to it was a cage-like machine lift operated by a pulley.
What's the meaning of that?
Murmured Goda, unconsciously copying her master's way of speaking. She touched one of the pillars.
Cold. Nothing special.
Durgard stepped forward.
That's it, he whispered in a voice full of awe. That is the new source. I can feel the energy flowing through the iron.
But it's not iron,
Tungdil inspected the metal. It's an alloy. It can conduct magic.
Of course. Probably these pillars go down through the floor and stick out of the bottom of the island.
They conduct energy from the new source up to that platform. He looked up.
Up there! That's where the Unslayables monsters were created.
Now it's our turn, said Ironheart,
pulling at Durgard's sleeve and pointing to the lift.
This will turn you into a proper magus. Have you thought up a nice wizard name?
Durgard cleared his throat.
I shall call myself Knowledge Lusty, in honor of Nodine.
Tungdil tutted.
That's not a good idea, Durgard. It has bad connotations for us. Think of something else.
He went over to the lift and went in.
Come on. The sooner you get the force inside you, the sooner we get out of this prison of ours.
You will be able to get us out of here, won't you?
Ironheart glowered at Durgard.
You Magi can always do stuff like that. You have to.
I shall try,
promised Durgard, and he climbed up to join Tungdil. The others operated the pulley hoist and heaved the two of them into the air.
The Lonely,
the man said when they were halfway up.
I shall call myself Durgard the Lonely. There's no one left except me. No other Fomulis to use the magic.
Only me.
Sad, but true, Tungdil agreed. He was watching the platform. Suddenly he perceived a slight glimmering. Then they saw it clearly. Faint sparks were dancing along the edges, licking at the iron walls of the cauldrons.
Magic,
said Durgard softly, with a trace of fear in his voice.
What will it be like to be suffused with magic?
Tungdil smiled at him encouragingly as the lift drew close to the platform.
Hundreds of Magi in the past survived to live longer than any soul in Girdlegard.
They slid up past the edge and looked down on its surface.
We...
He stopped abruptly.
Brave Vrakus,
he exclaimed. Durgard retreated to the back of the lift. One pace above the platform, an elf floated, supported on a cloud of vapor and lightning bolts that flashed between his torso and the metal. For the most part, his breast, belly, lower torso, shoulders, and upper arms were covered with armor fused to his flesh. His hands were in armored gloves. The rest of him was naked. A slim, narrow-bladed spear rotated next to him. Runes on the blade were glowing green.
Not a monster, but an elf, said Tungdil, trying to open the lift door.
Let us send him to his death before he wakes up.
The door bolts were jammed.
Curses!
He raised Keenfire and whacked it down on the lock. The fastening shattered, and the door swung open. At the same moment, the creature opened its eyes, showing nothing but black sockets under the lids. It hissed at them and showed its teeth, grabbed hold of the spear, and sank down onto the platform. As soon as its naked feet touched the metal, numerous symbols shone out on the armor.
Come here!
Tungdil stormed out, his axe raised to strike. The elf sprang up onto the nearest boiler, pushing off from there like a cat leaping. It catapulted itself up to a gap in the rock. It had gone for now. Sparks and lightning faded away.
What's going on up there?
Came Ironheart's worried voice. Tungdil stepped over to the edge of the platform and looked down at his friends.
Watch out! There's an elf in the cave! It was on the platform, bathing in magic. It was meant to be our enemy's little surprise.
He turned cautiously to the walls again.
Durgard, come here.
Where has it gone?
Asked the Famulis, feeling safer back in the cage.
I don't know. We'll see it soon enough.
Tungdil went round in a circle, searching. His eyesight was good in the half-light. No trace of the enemy anywhere. Unusually for him, he didn't mind. Apart from Keenfire, they had nothing to match the power of a magic-empowered elf. Durgard left the cage. He stepped onto the platform and walked into the center. He closed his eyes and raised his hands. Neither he nor Tungdil said a word. There was a loud crash, and a metallic grating sound destroyed the air of reverence.
The water's coming in! Goda screamed. The doors have burst! We're all going to drown! Use the lift! Get up here to the platform!
The cage clattered down to the ground. Tungdil called Durgard's name, but there was no response.
Wake up! You have to do something!
He demanded, giving him a push.
Durgard! Act now or we'll die!
The Magus staggered. Then he gasped for air and held his breast.
What power?
He breathed, overcome.
I can feel it, Tungdil. I can feel it in me.
The dwarf grabbed him by the shoulders.
Then use it to save us from the flood here. Bring the island up to the surface.
The cage appeared with the survivors from down below, and they jumped one by one onto the platform. Foaming masses of water surged around the massive pillars, extinguishing the fires under the boilers in vast clouds of steam. The change in temperature put the hot metal under incredible stress, and the rivets burst, flying out in all directions. The danger they were in grew by the moment, but all they could do was watch out for the elf
and hoped Durgard could save them. The Magus was acting as if in a trance. With a grin on his face and hands raised, he mumbled something until his fingers started to write glowing symbols in the air.